to Michigan HockeyCast 3.14, where Michigan wins, loses, and hopefully I don't say the word so. Weave and crochet. Those are going to be my new ignition words.
Okay. Are you knitting?
No, but I'm not going to sew anymore. Or at least that's the goal. Culvers. Also Culvers. Culvers could be the new word. We could just start segments with Culvers. What do you think?
I don't know about that.
Not in on that one either? What about the Ohio State announcers?
Well, it's definitely topical for this week.
You had some takes on them.
It was again, they are the radio people for Ohio State, because when you watch BTN Plus, they don't even bother to have their own broadcasters anymore. They just lay the radio of whoever the home team is over their video.
And sometimes not synced up, I think.
It's generally pretty decent, but the Penn State guy, I thought, was fine. I mean, he was a little over the top on some calls, but I didn't have any issues with him.
His problem was the guy that was, like, turning the knobs, right?
Yeah, his gains were way up and
jacking
way down, depending
volumes.
On.
Yeah, okay.
But anyway, the Ohio State folks were just real bad homerism, at least in some different parts.
I mean, that's college hockey,
so
probably.
On Friday, they say the line, then on Saturday they say it again, and at that point you realized it was just a bit that they do.
Just every time they play Michigan.
So it's, you know, Ohio State wearing their white uniforms with the red pants, and Michigan wearing the blue tops, blue pants, and of course the ugliest helmet in college hockey.
Do you think they do that for football too?
It's just like, okay, like, this doesn't really make much sense, because, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not an Ohio State fan. I think Ohio State has pretty good uniforms. I think a lot of the teams in the Big Ten do. I think the Toronto Maple Leafs have good uniforms, and I hate the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, you can dislike a team without being, you know, just an idiot. And
can you? Apparently.
And these guys apparently didn't know that. But what was even worse was a general, I don't know, lack of understanding about what was going on. I mean, I don't remember which game it was. Was it the Friday game where they go to review a play where there was a save by Napier, and then after the play, an Ohio State defenseman comes over and clocks a Michigan player kind of up high. Like, they're reviewing a hit to the head.
Okay.
They end up saying no 5-minute penalty. I don't even know if it was a penalty at all, but they were reviewing it. It was pretty clear if you were watching the play what they were looking at.
I think that was Friday. You're right.
And they are just baffled at what's going on and are just like, well, I didn't see anything there. I don't even know what they could be possibly looking at. That's just a very obvious everyday play. And I'm just thinking, like, what?
So was this better or worse than the NBCSN crew in South Bend where Nick Blankenberg is shoved into?
Okay, what I'll say is the NBC crew was doing an artful job of trying to nibble around the thing. And you could tell they knew what was going on, but were doing their best to sell a product. I'm not sure the color guy knew what was going on really at all, because then on Saturday, there's a play where Michigan, I think, takes a penalty on a play in, like, the neutral zone. And previous to that, Mel had been yelling at the referees about something, and he has a line about Michigan taking a penalty, which is like, well, that should calm Mel Pearson down a bit. And
I don't think coaches, like, calm down when teams, like, put themselves on the penalty kill.
And that was when I knew his brain was made of pudding. But I don't know. That was just a masterful effort.
That job is probably just, like, something people do, and then there's not, like, reviews, or you don't have to, like, have goals you meet. It's just like, well, who's going to call a game? Oh, Joe and Sal. All right, they're in. And what year? Oh, this is like their 19th year. Well, have we ever really looked at it? If there's any, no, but they're fine. They always do it. And it's like, it just seems like that's what, there's no, like, no one cares enough to investigate the situation. It's just that's going to be their thing.
Well, then you got the lovely thing the moment the period ends, where like they're like, and we're heading to the first intermission break, and then the like right then you get an advertisement that comes on. Hello, this is Urban Meyer. We are facing an unprecedented public health crisis, and you're just like, where's the remote?
Well,
cut the feed.
So what did I say? I was like, I think that when you're on the radio and you're like a quote-unquote celebrity who is endorsing a product, like, you shouldn't be able to announce yourself. Like, the celebrity should be so audibly recognizable that you shouldn't have to be like, you know, my name is Sandra Bullock or whatever it is. Like, you should just have to start talking. People be like, oh, look, that's my favorite movie star.
Well, I don't know how much people know what Urban Meyer sounds like. I know that they know what he looks like, but that's the tough part about radio is that...
I will say...
I mean, I've watched Urban Meyer coach a long time. I don't even really, like, know what his voice sounds like. If you played me five voices, I don't think I could pick out
could
exactly
you,
which
could
one
you
is...
Could you pick Urban Meyer's voice out of a lineup? So I will say I probably could now just because I've heard enough of him on, like, the Fox pregame shows and halftimes and stuff.
Yeah, I make sure not to watch those.
Well, okay, you're right. I will say that he does kind of know what he's talking about when it comes to, like, actual technical football.
I would don't necessarily. So.
Well, I think we unfortunately seen that play out in front of us. But, like, it's not like I like the guy, but, like, if he's going to say something intelligent, like, he did a whole thing about, timeouts and how much time is left and whether you run a play or take a knee and like what he made a whole chart about it. And I was like, this is probably one of the best things I've ever seen on a pregame show is like, you're actually telling somebody something that most people, including in certain situations, me and people I respect probably don't even understand. Like, oh, well, you have to do a lot of fast math and then realize, okay, wait a minute now, you know, how long does this take in this? And then is it first down and all that stuff? So he laid the whole thing out. And I was like, well, this is actually worth I tried to screen cap it. It didn't really work because I was on, like, my phone or something, and I was like, well, that's not great. But...
Well, the other highlights of the weekend were the score box didn't fit on the screen. It was partially chopped off on the edges.
Oh, yeah. We were playing, like, Ohio State, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the O wasn't quite on the screen.
Yeah.
And then the camera angle was shot from the rafters of the Pontiac Silverdome. And...
Which was magically rebuilt somehow.
Where the players are just a mile away. I mean, I felt like the Winter Classic at the Big House, where the players are just ants. You know, you have no idea really what's happening. I mean, it was hard enough to follow the puck, let alone see the numbers, because it was a bird's eye view, basically, of
and
the
then
game.
After every goal, the camera would just pan right
to the center
logo.
Ice, yeah.
And so you just see the Ohio State logo, and you have like, well, I'd kind of like to see... Oh, did the puck even go in the net, or are we just assuming that it did?
All the players are celebrating off screen.
Yeah.
And the same thing during commercials. They would just give you just the shot of the center ice, and that was it. And then sometimes, like, the face-off would be in a different area and was just about to happen, and then finally, you know, the cameraman would wake up and realize, oh, got to move it over.
I wonder if this probably also happens at Michigan, and all our viewers are viewers. Yes, this is a very visual podcast like the regular MGO podcast, but our listeners... have been complaining about BTN the entire year, and they're like, oh, I wonder if
I think these are largely the same issues that pop up in a lot of these broadcasts.
Have you guys ever watched BTN Plus?
So, just, again, an infuriating product that is utterly baffling how poor the quality can be at some distinct weekends. And, I mean, how many times did we say, I'd like to see a replay of that?
Like that is true. Okay. BTN Plus quality or quality of refereeing in the basketball game on Sunday?
I don't know. I wasn't really watching the basketball game on Sunday. Because
you didn't go back and rewatch it?
No, I don't have a DVR. Actually, I do, but I don't. I mean, I rewatched the highlights and everything, but
okay.
I was watching a women's basketball game while I was watching the men's basketball game.
So how was the refereeing quality in that?
In the women's game?
Yeah.
It was fine.
Did you ask Craig? I'm sure he has strong opinions. All right. We have now talked for about 9 minutes. We probably should get to the games.
Well, it was more exciting than the Friday game.
Jeez. And the first period of the Saturday game. But we might have just been, I don't know, trying to waste time for not wanting to talk about this because as we're getting settled into our seats on Friday night, the puck goes behind the net and Eric Portillo goes back to retrieve it, something that we're used to him seeing as he starts the Friday games, apparently, the last month or so. And this time it finally comes back to bite him, as you thought the puck on replay looked maybe took a bad bounce.
It's pretty clearly what it did. I mean, it was an interesting situation because you have one defenseman on the strong side where the puck's coming down. And
the side that he's facing.
Yeah, I think that was Truscott.
Okay.
And there was an Ohio State forechecker who was kind of had maybe a half step on him, but it was a close race coming there. So Portillo comes out to play the puck so that there's not that.
Which is the right play?
It's borderline, but okay. I'm not against it. And okay. He has Karinen on the far side where there's nobody. Mm-hmm. So all he has to do is go out there and then just ladle it around the board
just
to
push
get it to
along.
Karinen, yeah. And out of the reach of the Ohio State forechecker. And basically, it bounces off the boards between his legs, and then the Ohio State forechecker comes around. He kind of, runs around to the front of the net and kind of dives out, but it's too late. That's kind of puck luck to me. I think it's a more forgivable issue than the one against Wisconsin last week, where he just froze. I mean, that was like, uh-oh, he doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah,
this one was like, yeah, that happens if you play the puck a lot. Every so often, you're going to get a bad bounce. And
do you think the puck was going to get to Karinen?
Like, it wasn't going to make him. No, the Ohio State guy was going to get it first. Which
of all people was Gustav Westlund?
I mean, if we're picking out the scenarios there, you'd much rather have the Ohio State guy beat Truscott to the puck than you'd have that happen.
Yeah.
But
so you don't really fault Portillo in this situation?
I did at first, but after watching it again, it's just tough.
Yeah, it was an interesting play. Like, if we would have seen maybe some replays of it, we might have been able to dig a little bit deeper. I don't know. It seemed like he waited on the puck a lot, and I don't know, when you're waiting on the puck, it's kind of like in baseball, they teach you, don't let the ball play you, and I don't know. I
mean, it was definitely a do-or-die play, because that could happen, right? Uh-huh. I mean, he comes out, there's a dude, just steaming right up on him. That needed to be a precise play, and sometimes when you need a precise play, you don't get the bounce. And I still don't have major issues with the amount that he plays the puck, because a really effective goalie who does it well can totally break down the opposing forecheck.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a real asset to have if you can get it to work. And again, this wasn't, I mean, maybe if you want to fault him on something, it might be like, I don't know, lack of coordination or him being very tall and not controlling his feet well.
It's too tall to play the puck.
I mean, we see that how many times his own power fell over himself.
Well,
I mean, sometimes when you're that big, you might not be very coordinated, and that bounce between his legs that, I don't know, I can't really say, but it was very unfortunate and was like, oh, boy. That was kind of the reaction to it.
Yeah, that was not how Michigan needed this game to start. But as soon as that happened, Michigan did respond in pretty well, as they did get a power play and finished it on a KJ shot from, I think, the near side dot that it looked like he maybe beat Napier near side.
Although, I will say, it wasn't a great power play in the sense that...
No.
All of the issues that then popped up in the power play were there from the beginning. Ohio State wanted you to do that.
Yeah.
They wanted you to shoot from the outside, from the point, or from the circle.
Yeah.
They wanted you to beat their goalie from distance.
Which...
And Kent Johnson did. Congrats. But then that continued to be their issue. They couldn't get it into the high danger areas. And so they get the power play goal, but it might have taught them the wrong lessons.
And I didn't think that was the greatest goal that Napier's given up. Like,
yeah, it's a pretty good shot.
Yeah, but it's short side, right? I mean, like, you're just... That's the rule on goalies.
I mean, at least Kent Johnson's a good shooter.
Yeah.
I mean, if he's giving that up to, I don't know...
Who?
I'm trying to think of a default guy here. Shane Switzer from last year.
Picking someone who's not on the team this year.
Yeah,
very
it's a
good
call. Way to stay on good terms.
Yeah, that's a nice pull. All right. So then Ohio State gets a penalty and they don't do much on, or a power play, and they don't really do much on that. And then we get another like funky little situation where it looked like a shot came from, and again, we didn't get seven replays of this, but a shot came from sort of the edge of the circle that went over Portillo's shoulder and under the bar to give Ohio State a 2-1 lead. But it didn't look like it was like a threatening situation. It didn't look like, oh, guy's skating in and blasting a shot and he's not going to see it.
So
you thought maybe it was deflected?
the issue with this play is not that I didn't get to see it on replay. I've watched the play over and over again. I mean, Ohio State tweeted it out after like 30 minutes, and I've watched it like 20 times.
Ah, so you have seen 7 replays.
But they're not good replays because it's just the initial thing over and over and over again. This is where you want the 4 or 5 angles they show you in an NHL game to get an idea. I mean, it's very hard to tell from the rafters of the Pontiac Silverdome what's going on right here, because there's a shot taken from the point, and Portillo goes down on his knees at the normal time you would to stop a shot.
Mm-hmm.
And he's on his knees for like 2 seconds, and then all of a sudden he just goes like this with his shoulder, and it's over his shoulder. I mean, I don't know what happened there. I don't know if it pinballed like off the ice and bounced up. It was very strange. It was not the timing you expect. Like, the shot is taken, and then way longer than normal, it then goes over his shoulder.
Sort of like a changeup.
And, you know, again, the quality of the replay is so bad you can't see where the puck is until all of a sudden his shoulder sort of, you know, sort of goes up, but that was bizarre.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened.
It was
there.
Another sort of like goal that Ohio State needed, because like we remember from the first series that, I mean, they didn't get very many good chances. They had those two power play goals that both sort of came with asterisks for different reasons, but it wasn't like they were driving play into the slot and into the house and creating really good chances, and goalies were making big time saves and they were really threatening. And in the first period, they get kind of 2 puck lucky bounces and goals. It was tough, like you said. It was tough to necessarily pin it on Portillo. I think I sort of faulted him for both of them when I did my write up. I don't know. It's just a very weird. I don't know that Mann does any better. Who knows? But. So Michigan heads into the break, and they're down 2-1, and we were just like, you know, this is exactly what needed to happen for Ohio State to end up winning this game, is, like, this kind of stuff. And then in the second period, like, there's a lot of nothing, where we talked about this, like, you know, it seemed like Michigan only brought one line to this game, and you had the KJ Beniers line that would drive some play, but it wasn't like, again, they were getting deep into dangerous areas, they just would... You know, you mentioned a lot of times, maybe you even tweeted about this during the games, is they'd enter the zone on like a 2-on-2 or 3-on-3 with a little bit of speed, and then you just see a crisscross, and they try to drop the puck, and a guy would shoot from 25 feet away.
Well, they love to drop it to the trailer. That's like one of their favorite plays to do, which has some upside, but I don't know, there was a lot of predictability, and especially then on the power plays, Ohio State was like, sure, shoot from the point all you want.
Yeah.
We are just not going to let you be in front of the net and have it, you know, right out in front and shoot from point blank. We're going to make you shoot from the perimeter. And Michigan was way too willing to do that.
So it's 2-1. And then pretty early on in the second period, Ohio State gets a third goal. And this is another shot from distance that meanders its way through
3 or 4 bodies at least.
A number of limbs and humans. And then you said is deflected right in front. And Portillo did not really have a chance on that one. It looked like Michigan's defense kind of abandoned a guy or two in front. And
yeah, I mean, seeing eye shot finds its way through a bunch of bodies and
gets deflected. That one's definitely not on him. And it's 3-1. And at that point, like you know, Michigan has the skill and the capability to come back, but you just almost don't see the. I don't know if it's effort. I don't know if like it just. They just, you know, Ohio State was playing very well on defense that day as much, but it just seemed like they could not generate a thing. I mean, they'd get a chance or two, but I mean, half of my notes here, but nothing dangerous. You know, they get a chance, but just nothing that is like you think, and we kind of jump off the couch like, oh, that should be a goal, but there wasn't really anything like that at all.
Yeah. I mean, that pretty much explains it.
Whole game. They finally do get one back late, or I should say in the third period. Beniers had a backdoor tap in on a rebound off of a shot that, again, not really great clear as to what happened, but the shot comes in. It looked like it was saved over to the side, and he did flip one up and over.
He got his own rebound.
Oh, he took the shot?
Yeah.
Okay.
He took the shot on the one side, and then he spun around and then grabbed it on the other side. And that was one of the few moments where there was really players in the, like, it was kind of a busted play with only a couple defensemen there, only a couple forwards. It wasn't, you know, all 10 guys in the zone, which is, you know, Michigan needed that. And that came with, like, 15 minutes, so it definitely, there was time. But then, they didn't get much after that.
No, not very much. I think Michigan had about four power plays and just nothing, really. I mean, their power play kind of exploded for a while starting the second half of the season, and it's looked good at times. I mean, they had that nice power play against Wisconsin early on, even though they didn't score, but they had multiple chances. Yep. But that's really the last time that they had a really good power play sequence where the puck was moving and shots were coming from dangerous spots on forcing goalies to make saves. Now it just seems like a bunch of perimeter passing, not really anything quick and decisive, no diagonals. I mean, we saw a lot of that even in the first half of the season where you dissect sort of the penalty kill. And it's just kind of become bland.
It's too predictable at the moment. And again, when they're, you know, passing one side to the top, the other side to the top, the other side to the top, and then, oh, the guy at the top shoots, and it's just like, no! That's what Ohio State wants you to do!
But it's not like pinballing, right? It's like kind of skating and then a pass, and then some skating and a pass. It's not like it's like one guy to the next to the next, tic-tac-toeing around and getting guys like on the wrong skated and you know, moving people from one side of the ice to the other. It's just like, all right, now we're all going to go stand over here. Okay, now we're all going to go stand over here. And, you know, maybe if a perfect shot comes through, but that's not really the mark of a power play that seems to be clicking. We should mention that it looked like Michigan's equipment manager went down.
Yeah, don't know exactly what happened, but
we had no real insight into that. It caused a delay in the game, which was, you said, kind of sucked some...
I mean, it was like with 4 minutes left in the game in a one-goal game. It was very much like, oh, this is... There's never a good time to have a person collapse, but this was a particularly unfortunate one in terms of, you know, kind of removing the tension from the game.
The last thing I wanted to say about this game was that it looked like Michigan didn't forecheck super well either. Like, they had some success against Ohio State in the previous series, turning them over and just putting pressure on them. And Ohio State looked a number of times like if they could get it to the red line and dump it, like that was, you know, success, you know, job completed. Let's get off the ice and let the next line on. And that didn't really happen a whole lot. Like, Ohio State wasn't over like an overly possession team. I think Corsi was probably 2-1 in favor of Michigan, which is a lot, but the chances weren't great. And Ohio State still was able to sort of carry the puck out and kind of keep Michigan where they wanted them, especially after they got the lead.
Here's what I'll say.
All right.
This was a, I don't know, was a better loss than the one to Michigan State in that you really didn't give up any opportunities to the opponent.
Yeah.
And, you know, the goals that you gave up to Michigan State were sort of real goals. I mean, you know, where the
defensive breakdowns.
Defense breaks down against a team that can't score at all and just like very concerning things. This is what happens if you lose to Ohio State. It's just like a bunch of bad puck luck and you didn't do enough offensively. And you did fine defensively. You didn't, mostly controlled the game.
You had four power plays and you didn't take advantage of them.
Yep.
I mean, against a penalty kill that's in the 70s.
I mean, this is just kind of a good riddance type game and, you know, is an example of why we always are constantly beating a dead horse about the NCAA hockey tournament, because this can happen to any team against any other team at any given time. And on any given day, the amount of randomness is high. And, you know, this time the randomness didn't go Michigan's way.
Did you at least enjoy Culver's after the game?
Yeah, I would say so.
Usually you are like just...
Well, we had to drive all the way back to this location to eat it, so...
Wait, so you're very bummed that you didn't get to eat in the car?
Well, I was hungry.
You also had snacks.
That is true.
All right. Well, let's take a break and we'll come back and talk about a happier, more exciting game.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Divided down, draws around me, softening the sound. Sleepy time when I lie with my lamp by my side, and she's breathing low. And the candle dies.
We've, in game two, Michigan maybe played the first period as the most boring period of hockey I've ever seen. Maybe at any level.
Was there seven shots? I think it was four to
it was five, three, to,
five
two.
To two. Yeah.
And, I mean, I think they had a power play. Yeah, they did have a power play. My second note is we discuss what ways we want to die. So I don't actually remember the context of that, but it probably fits in well as
let me see what the context was.
What's going to happen in this period? I mean, there was I did have that there was another minor call on Brisson. Ohio State obviously did nothing on their power play. I wrote down Michigan did bupkis on theirs. So at least we're getting some good words in here. It was just, I think that somebody clipped, maybe even Brian Mack, who clipped you and me and maybe Yost Bilt basically tweeting the same thing at the same time. And he's like, oh, some people are having really nice afternoons, but
I'd honestly rather watch us struggle to gain the zone than have it in the zone for 45 seconds while one OSU penalty killer doesn't have a stick and we don't make a single high-danger pass. That was my comment.
That sounds like you. Yeah.
And then you responded, so you'd rather be shot than drown.
Sounds like me. Okay.
And I said yes, and you said, what other ways would you prefer to die?
Well, like, that's something else. Here we go. We're going to go on an aside now because this hockey weekend in series or season is even kind of flittering away in some senses, but like people like discuss stuff like that, and it's like, well, what ways do you want to die? Like, what do you mean? What way? I mean, yeah, of course, not long and painful is probably obvious, but like, what can you gain from like a conversation?
That should have been this week's gimmicky top five.
Just top five ways that you want to die. Oh my goodness. Okay, we're gonna get back to hockey because. While that perfectly sums up the first period, the second period was was a classic second half Michigan second period where they kind of play a 50-50 game and then just take over. And we finally get a 2-on-1 and a high danger chance, and Bordalo and Brisson have very nice back-to-back passing, and Brisson scores again. I believe now he has the most goals on the team at 8. Which doesn't sound like a lot, but I think there's two or three guys that have 7 goals. So Michigan's goal scoring has been sort of spread out. You don't have a Cole Caulfield. You have 3 or 4 guys that can put the puck in the net. Ohio State did manage to get an odd man rush. It didn't really come to much. Man made a nice save and cover. And then the onslaught kind of began for Michigan after that. Michigan did get a 5-minute major power play and looked kind of like the first period for the first 2.5 minutes before Brisson, I believe, got in the slot and found a wide open Dakota Raby at the dot who filled the back of the net for, I don't think Dakota Raby's been on the power play this year that I can remember. Maybe in that like ASU series where it seemed like, you know, it was just everybody run to your position in softball when you're up by 15 runs. But like, so he scores from there. Do you remember him on the power play at all?
Well, that goal definitely answered the question. Dakota Raby's on the power play? Because it was very, very surprising to see that.
But he made a count, and then Michigan's up 2, and at that point you're thinking, oh, I'd like to see Ohio State score 2 goals, because I'm not sure if that's going to happen, given their chances. And then you get Captain Jack, who's back in the lineup again because Johnny Beecher, we did not mention the first section, Johnny Beecher did not make the trip.
And then the second game, LaPointe was scratched in favor of
Raby,
who we just talked about, and then Summers was back in the lineup. So there was a lot of roster changes in that second
game. After that kind of not so great first game.
Yeah.
So Captain Jack gets a tap in. He hasn't been playing. You know, we've debated between LaPointe, Raby, him, Lambert, as to like who should play. We both kind of like LaPointe Over the last month or so, it looked like he was kind of gaining some traction. Raby was on that Van Wy Moyle line. They've moved some pieces around there. Morgan has become more of a fixture. It still looks like maybe they're looking for that 11th or 12th player to skate, yeah, potentially. So, but good for Becker. The captain gets his third goal. Lambert came down the wing, took a shot, and Napier just deflected it out in the slot, and Becker was there to put it home. And as we're writing that down, Thomas Bortolo cashed a rebound over Napier's shoulder from sort of a sharp angle off of another rebound, and so you have more high danger chances in this sort of mini period than maybe the rest of the weekend.
Which meant it was an avalanche of goals.
Something else that you
from the Penn State said, weekend.
Yes, that's great. So then, I mean, that was it, right? Like, it's 4-0, and
yeah,
you're going into the third, and Ohio State's, I mean, they're not going to, like, create anything. I believe you told me at the end of this period, well, at least I can switch over and watch the Leaves and the Habs.
Yep.
Did you do that?
Yeah, well, that game was very entertaining. They had the 4 goals in 3 minutes in the early second period.
But that was later on, though. Yeah, that wasn't overlapping with the Michigan
game. The first period
game
was kind of boring, but...
So we can talk a little bit about the third period, because Michigan scores 2 more goals, and I believe, like, Brian was, like, quote-tweeting someone who said, you know, why can't Michigan just win 4-0 and 4-3? Why does it have to be, like, a billion to nothing and
then
losing?
Well, that's not how hockey works.
Is that how sports work? Or no? No? Okay. So they get another power play that doesn't really do anything. I wrote down it was better-ish. So they moved the puck a little bit, held the zone in, but Ciccolini ended up getting a goal, and Bortolo had a really nice sort of replay of his game winner in Madison from a few weeks ago, where he cuts in from the wing, makes a guy look a little silly, and then beats the goalie, and it's 6-0. The other thing about this is that so Napier's out after the second period. They bring in backup Snowden, and he keeps losing his stick.
Yeah.
Did you notice that? Like, yeah. On one of the goals, his stick ended up, like, out near the tops of the circles, which is a long way for a stick to travel,
yeah,
I feel like. And then later on in the period, he kind of threw it to the side. It got knocked out again, and I don't know. That seemed a little odd to me.
Yeah, it was definitely very... There's just a lot going on in that third period that wasn't terribly important, but
we're trying to tell you about something.
Yeah.
So Strauss Mann played in the second game, the Saturday game. Do you think that's it now? Do you think that the team has decided, hey, no more of these, like, screw-up games. We can't afford any more little stumbles. We have to pick a goalie, because this wasn't going to work going. I mean, you can do this throughout the season, but at some point, if you're actually going to try to make a run through the Big Ten tournament or the NCAA tournament, you're not alternating goalies. You're picking the best that you got, and this seems like a good chance to do that.
Here's what I think. I think Mann and Portillo will split the ASU series.
You think they will again?
And then I think Mann will start both Minnesota games.
Regardless of the way it plays out? Because
I mean, I think he's still the guy, and he had a shutout this weekend, but they also want to keep getting Portillo involved in case they need him, and mm-hmm. I think they feel very comfortable with their ability to beat Arizona State, and, you know, and then Minnesota will be the real sort of, you know, test of these are high leverage games, right?
I mean, you don't think this is the better chance to just do that, or do you think...
I don't think you have to pick, and I mean, I don't think there's, like, a time where we have to go with one guy now. I think they think Mann's their guy, and you do that when you have to. I mean, I don't know.
Mm. Okay. No, that's good. Did this series, like, change your view of the team or the season at all?
No, not particularly. Yeah, it was just sort of like, oh, that was a disappointing first game, but it's hockey. Sometimes those things happen, and, you know, it's these kinds of gigantic upsets can happen in hockey a lot easier than they can happen in, say, basketball. And so you lose an unfortunate game where you didn't have a good enough energy level. You had some things go against you, but overall you were a lot better than the other team. You outscored them, 8-3 on the weekend. This is still a team in my mind that can go very, very far in the tournament. I think that they can absolutely win the national championship. I would not be surprised if they do, but they could also bomb out in the first round, which is true for any team because of how this tournament works. But Michigan in particular, I think, is kind of susceptible to those highs and lows. But on the whole...
Why do you think they in particular are?
Well, I think... I mean, it's just what we've kind of seen this year, right? They haven't had that consistent precision that Wisconsin and Minnesota have had. But we saw this with Wisconsin just a week ago. When Michigan is playing at their best, they can be one of the two or three best teams in the country. And they can absolutely win the tournament.
Yes.
It's just a matter of how does it go on any given day? How does the puck luck go against you? Where, you know, are they clicking? I don't know. But
I think if they had somehow been able to rescue that Friday game where they played terribly and just kind of gritted their way to a win like that, those are things that, like, you need to have, especially during a tournament run, because you're not going to get, like you said, you're going to get puck luck, you're going to face some stodgy teams, you're going to just not be on, you know, have your stuff, as they say in baseball, on certain nights, but you still have to win the games, and it just seems like Michigan has a lot of stumbles. Like, they stumbled, they split with Penn State in their only series, they split with Michigan State in their only series, they split with Ohio State in a series, they split with, you know, Wisconsin, which that's fine. I mean, I understand it. It's just, it seems like a lot of splits. And like when you look at Wisconsin and Minnesota, those teams are getting sweeps.
But I mean, I'm in this position where it's kind of like a very nihilistic, nothing really matters right now with this end of the season, right? Because it's not like a year ago where it's every game matters. We're fighting for our lives. If we don't win these games, we're toast. Right now, especially with, and we can talk about this, where today the poll has Michigan at 7. They barely moved, even though they lost to a terrible team. Like,
it's weird, isn't it?
It just feels like it's already been decided Michigan's getting in. It's already decided they're not winning the regular season crown.
Yeah.
So why are we even playing these games? And, like, you could win every game the rest of the way and look great and show up and get hit in the face with a frying pan in the first round, right? And, like, your season's over. Like, that could happen in Minnesota. I mean, wasn't it 3 years ago when Michigan was in the tournament that the number one overall seed lost to, like, Air Force or someone like that? Like, it's just, this is how it works. You can go 30-0, and then in the first round you lose 2-0, right? And it's just, it's hard for me to read into any individual game because how this translates to the tournament doesn't really matter to me.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking more also in terms of just, you know, the Big Ten tournament and stuff either. Because, I mean, you played hang banners, right? Like the regular season banner, the
yeah. I mean, there will obviously be a lot on the line in the Big Ten tournament and the NCAA tournament. But what happens in any given weekend from now until those happen to me has no real bearing on what will happen in those events because we basically know what Michigan is and we know what the opponents are, and it's just we don't know what will happen until we show up on that given day.
So
I can't read, you know, the puck going between Straussman's leg or Eric Portillo's legs behind the net, right? What does that mean for when they play St. Cloud State? Nothing.
Yeah.
it doesn't.
That's fair. So we can look at the standings a little bit. I mean, Minnesota and Wisconsin are very far ahead of Michigan. I think that Wisconsin is 12 points ahead of them, and they're in second place. Michigan has currently scheduled, what, 3 games left, so they can't even get enough points to even catch Wisconsin, even if Wisconsin...
It's called mathematically eliminated.
Right. And Minnesota's even further ahead. They are sort of in a bit of a struggle with Notre Dame. Notre Dame has 4 games left. Michigan has...
Have they officially canceled those Notre Dame-Penn State games yet?
They have not. Not that I've heard. The only thing that I've heard about Penn State was last weekend. I don't know that anything has been canceled for this upcoming weekend. But Michigan does have 2 games in hand. They also play Arizona State this weekend.
Yeah.
So they both have 29 points, but Michigan has 2 more wins, and Notre Dame has a bunch of overtime wins. And so basically the way the math works out is that if those Penn State games do get canceled, which there is some noise about that, and Michigan's Penn State games don't get rescheduled, which same thing.
Penn State is just permanently cursed with COVID at the moment.
It's just still forever. Then, you know, Michigan would basically have to just win one more game.
Probably. It's so hard to do these different things when we don't know what's going to happen with the scheduling. Right?
But essentially, the battle's for third or fourth, because none of these teams are going to fall to fifth.
The battle is for third, but Michigan's got the inside track. I think that's the best way you can put it, because going into the mathematical details is tough, because tomorrow they could announce that, you know, the Penn State games for Michigan has been rescheduled, right?
That's true.
Like, just and throws this all off.
That's true. So Michigan does have a little bit of a leg up, an inside track, as you said, over Notre Dame, who I believe is off this weekend. So Michigan will have Arizona State. They pretty handily demolished them in the first.
Yeah, Arizona State has
series of the season.
They have struggled this year, but they were being upgraded to a much better conference than they've been playing in previously because they were playing at no conference, and that meant they were playing a lot of teams that were not very good. And they've played every game on the road, traveling from a long distance away. So, you know, I think for that program, it hasn't been the most catastrophic season. You know, I think it's humbling, but they've done an admirable job to fight through all of the issues. And, hey, they beat Wisconsin a couple times. So,
they did.
You know, again, this is a lot like the Ohio State series last weekend. Michigan should win these games, but they might not because it's hockey.
Yeah, you'd hope they would, but we can look also at the College Hockey News Power 16, which doesn't come out until Tuesday, which is always helpful for our Monday night podcast.
We were sixth last week, right?
Right. That's where we're at. You said that we're seventh in the polls, which is sort
one
of reflective.
One spot down, so it just feels like John Butchergross and the other, you know, talking heads have kind of decided Michigan's going to make the tournament. And unless they do something very, very bad down the stretch, they're going to make the tournament because it's been predetermined they're making the tournament, right? It's kind of like how voters for the Selke trophy just kind of decide before the season who's going to win the Selke that year. And it's based on your reputation. And, like, this is the year Sean Couturier is winning the Selke. We've all agreed about that. So
as long as he doesn't get hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been an interesting year. It now feels like we're just sort of playing out games. The team, you know, usually you describe sort of recruits or teams or just different players and situations as sort of like, you know, they have sort of a low ceiling, high floor, but Michigan seems to have this high ceiling, low floor where any range of outcome is pretty much possible in every sort of game. And
I mean, we're frozen in carbonite until the Big Ten tournament starts, and then we see what will really happen when the real games are being played.
Well,
I mean, playing Minnesota will be an interesting test, yes, but that's not this week, so we're, you know, extra frozen until then. And I don't think there's much that can be gleaned from Arizona State, unfortunately.
No, I don't think so either. You could lose two games.
You're not going to gain anything from beating them, so
no.
It would be nice to beat them.
Because you don't, I mean, you could lose something from it. But any last words of advice for the week? You're going to have a busy week, aren't you?
I am always busy, so.
You're always busy. No. But your softball duties are rounding into
form. Well, softball is starting this coming weekend in Leesburg, Florida. And is baseball starting this week, or is it the next week?
I'm not sure.
But those sports are getting underway. Volleyball has started. The lacrosse and soccer seasons are about to start. And obviously, the basketball teams are rounding the stretch to the postseason as well. So a lot of Michigan sports going on. And
you'll be announcing the game.
Consume a lot of content if you can.
You'll be announcing the game on Thursday?
Against Iowa, yeah.
So check
the men's
out
team. WCBN Sports is broadcast, I guess.
And just mute Dan Dakich or whoever we get and play Alex Drain in the background.
Yeah,
we should try to do that. No?
I don't know. Well, it depends on how good the broadcast is.
All right. Well, I think that's about it. We've run out of things to talk about, and we will check in with you next week after the Arizona State series.
For listening to Michigan HockeyCast 3.14. For Alex Drain and David Nasternak, come back next week as we preview a series that actually matters. Oh, did I tell you about how there's a ghost in my apartment?
Your current one?
Yes.
No.
Okay, so a few weeks ago, I was in bed reading, and then I had showered previously, and then I'm like, okay, it's about time to go to bed. So I get out of bed to go brush my teeth before I get back in bed and go to sleep. And I walk out of the bedroom, and the bathroom door is shut. And I basically never shut the bathroom door, because I live by myself, and, like, whatever.
Did you leave it open, or was it, like, it was it?
I mean, it was just open, like it normally basically
so
is.
Has there been a draft?
Well, so here's the thing. That door takes a lot of, like, manpower to shut. Like, it doesn't fit, like, properly on the, like, you have to kind of, like, push it in, basically. And so I was already like, well, this is weird. And I like, I don't remember shutting this. And so I go to open it, and it is like, it's locked. Like, I'm trying to open it, and it just like open, and it's just like jammed. Like, it's like what it is when it's locked. But it can only be locked from the inside. And, you know.
Do you think you locked it?
But I couldn't have locked it because.
You couldn't. Do you think you would locked it, left it open, and like it got shut?
It had to have somehow gotten shut and then, like, jammed or something. Like, and so it's, like, 2:30 in the morning, by the way. And now I'm just like, well, this is weird. And...
Did you get scared with stuff like that?
Well, I was mostly just annoyed, but...
You couldn't get in your bathroom.
So I'm just, like, you know, like, this, trying to, like, you know, bang it open. And so then finally, I was just trying to figure out what in the world I was going to do. So I walked into the kitchen and got out one of those, like, tools, right? That's got, like, 15 blades and, you know, all different kinds of things. And I found a blade that fit inside the keyhole and basically picked the lock and got it to open. And then when I went in there, there was no one in there.
There's no, you couldn't see the ghost?
So my conclusion is there's a ghost.
Were you actually thinking there could be someone in there?
I wasn't sure. I mean, I actually did walk to the apartment door and was like, well, is this open? Like,
did you bring, like, a hammer with you? Or frying pan? So you were in the kitchen. You could have grabbed, like, a frying pan and, like, a little knife that...
Yeah, it was... That was weird.